Well, if you're dealing with addiction, finding treatment is difficult. It's hard to navigate what's out there. The truth is, every patient's needs are different and constantly evolving. I've had the pleasure of vetting True Recovery in Orange County. They realized, of course, that effective care can't be one size fits all because they're reputable and they care about their patients. So, of course, they're going to be highly individualized. They have developed a comprehensive range of treatments that can address all the facets of drug and alcohol addiction. And True Recovery's master-level clinicians maintain small caseloads, allowing them to truly personalize their care and get involved on a connected level, which is what the key to recovery is. They offer individualized treatment plans from residential to outpatient. And again, always with the holistic approach and focus on accountability. As patients become ready, True Recovery offers assistance with life and coping skills, school and vocational coordination, as well as community reintegration support. We hear this all the time where people get recovery but then don't know how to live. They don't know how to get out into the world. Well, True Recovery helps with that. I've spoken with True Recovery's medical director and was impressed with their range of therapeutic modalities and psychiatric services. This experienced team is well equipped to manage patients at all levels. To request information on how True Recovery can provide you with your personalized care or for that of one of your family members, go to drdrew.com/true, T-R-U-E. That is drdrew.com/true, T-R-U-E.
You're listening to the This Life podcast with Dr. Drew Pinsky and me, Mike Catherwood.
That's right. We're doing it this time. So check it out. Thanks for listening.
You live.
Hey, welcome to another This Life episode. Mike Catherwood sitting in for Bob Forrest.
Well, yeah.
Sir. Yeah.
I brought a hat, though, so I could be Bob if you'd like.
You do look a little Bobby. You got to have a little more of a brim on that.
Here's the problem,
where's the
Drew?
Weird glasses, too? You need those. And you need to talk over me, and you need to complain about Suboxone and Trump.
And I need to pay about $900 more for the hat.
I know.
Because he uses those Nick Fouquet hats.
He has a pretty fancy hat. Yeah. And so today it's a really interesting topic. We're going to talk to someone about fitness and recovery and how these two things
can work off each other.
Overlap. Why don't you introduce our guest?
Our guest today, Chrissy Mae Cagney. This is a woman who has so much to say and has so much – I mean, she honestly has so much credit that is worth mentioning that I don't even think I'd do it justice. I'm just going to go right into it and say it's a pleasure to have you here and it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. I'm being honest when I say that you've accomplished so much that's really worth mentioning that I don't even think I really should kind of give you credits. I'd rather you just talk about how you got into the fitness world and what drew me to you. I want you to know something, and this is God's honest truth. I never do any legwork to get guests. I just rely on either friends of mine in the fitness industry. I'll be like, hey, come on my podcast. Don't be a dick.
Right.
Or I'll have the producer of the show, this nice young lady, Michelle, will reach out to people and then I'll say yes or no. I got on her ass about getting you on the show because I was so motivated by your story. I'm in recovery myself, and your level of honesty and your transparency is something that's really kind of beautiful. And you're not an exhibitionist. You're just someone who's put yourself out there to help others. And it's really very nice. And I wanted to give you that compliment, and now I'll give you a chance to maybe introduce yourself to our audience if you could.
Oh, man, I'm so bad about talking about myself. I'm Chrissy Mae Cagney. I own Donuts and Deadlifts and Black Iron Gym and Black Iron Nutrition and LO Supply Co. and D&DL MFG. And I kind of fell into each from the previous one, so... my parents were both triathletes, so I was kind of like born into fitness, as that's how they met. And so I grew up very athletic, playing a lot of team sports, doing a lot of running, biking, swimming, stuff like that. And so I started having behavioral problems in elementary school. And so kind of sports and athletics were the one thing that would always pull me away, or I mean, improve those issues that I had, and improve my social behaviors with other kids and stuff. And so as time went on, you know, I started using in high school, and that was around the time where I got very involved in fitness. And then, I fell into fitness essentially just by joining a strength and conditioning class my junior year in high school. And I got put in charge. I was the only girl in the class, and the other girl in the class was actually blind. So I got put in charge of kind of mentoring her through class, and that was kind of my first experience, like personal training or coaching, so to speak. And then that was just personal training was just my side job all through college.
Was it something that you took seriously, or was it just kind of a means to an end and a good way to make extra cash?
Definitely means to an end. I had absolutely zero intention of going into the fitness industry.
And it seemed like I saw a lot of parallels in your use and mine when it comes to drug use and alcohol, and that mm-hmm. it kind of worked for a while, at least from what I read about you. And that is what tricks you into thinking that you could pull it off. I mean, for me, I wasn't a full-fledged shitbag deadbeat until the very end. I mean, I could kind of convince myself that I could live my life and drink and use at the same time. Did you yeah. suffer from that, unfortunately, as well?
Oh yeah, that's exactly what I went through. Cause like I was a good student, and even though I was fucked up all the time, I always had good grades. I always stayed in school, and caught, well, I had an ankle monitor on a lot of the time. So I had to, but yeah, I always like really liked being in school, and I always really liked learning. Like, and I battled those demons. And then another thing is, like, I got into bodybuilding around the time I was like 18 or 19 when my drug use was really bad. And anytime I would quit using, I would gain weight, which was not ideal for bodybuilding. And I kind of went back and forth like this for a year of using and then trying to compete in bodybuilding. And obviously the two do not go hand in hand. And so it was just really ugly for a while because I wasn't properly using fitness the right way for a few years.
And not to jump ahead too much. Oh, go ahead, Drew. I'm sorry.
I just think there's a lot of people that probably do stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a common misconception that anyone involved in physique
no.
competitions yeah. is healthy. And that's not necessarily the
no,
case.
No, I mean, just the steroid use itself is not about health.
Well, and also with females, I would imagine it's not even just the anabolics. It's a lot of it's just like the clenbuterol or the winstrol and
Anavar.
Yeah. It's a dirty game. It's a dirty game for sure. How did you eventually separate the unhealthy aspects of the fitness industry and be able to kind of distill it down into making it something that was helping you in recovery as opposed to hindering it?
Well, because I went through, so I tried to get sober. I was like going back and forth for about the 2 years before I actually finally quit cold turkey. And so there was 2 years of constant, like, sober for a few weeks, relapse, and just like that. And so that was around the time I got into CrossFit. And CrossFit was one of the things that was really helpful at the time. And then I kind of fell off of it because it was expensive and I couldn't afford it. I was an addict and I didn't have $100-something laying around a month for CrossFit. And then when I finally realized that Reno was kind of the main problem with my drug use and that I had to get out of Reno, I moved down to Southern California, and the gym that I joined down there was a strength and conditioning gym, but like more on the powerlifting, weightlifting side of things opposed to CrossFit. And that was, I fell in love with it. And that was the one thing that actually had the power to like pull me away from all of the using.
What gym was that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. But,
Rise Above Fitness.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
So you realize that, you know, kind of powerlifting and pure strength training, absolute strength is where it's at for you. And
right.
at this point, how you're a business owner or no, it's still kind of like a pipe dream and something that was far off from.
Well, what was interesting about working there is I kept getting promised I was going to get my own location. And so I kept putting, you know, more and more effort and energy into that gym. But meanwhile, around that time, I had gotten out of all of the using, but I was still drinking really heavily at the time. So because I was drinking so much, it just never happened. I never got my own gym. And so I kept pouring more and more into it and not getting enough out of it. And then I just realized that the issue is that my drinking problem was completely out of control. I had finally quit the drugs and then the drinking.
Let me ask you, because that just, yeah, I know addicts awfully well, and that's not a normal thing to arrive at unless something hits you in the face. So I'm wondering what happened that got through to you. Because otherwise, a good addict will just sit in resentment.
Yeah. I quit drugs, God damn it. Yeah, why is this not happening?
Yeah, I'm not doing meth anymore. God damn it, give me a gym.
I just was losing one person after another. I lost my dad.
Okay.
And not like, he didn't die. Right. I lost him and my best friend, who was my dad. And I lost every single friend I had in Reno. I started to lose my mom. And okay. I essentially lost every friend I had in Southern California to the point where I was drinking a bottle of whiskey a night by myself. Mm. And I was waking up and I was still drunk. And I was going to Rise Above Fitness and training my clients at 5 or 6 in the morning, hammered. And I was starting, you know, people were like noticing, and then I thought I was going to lose my career. And I was like the loneliest I had ever been in my life.
Got it.
And I knew it needed to stop, but I just wasn't ready. So it went on for 3 or 4 more months. And then on May 28th of 2013, I woke up in the hospital twice.
After a seizure or something?
I essentially drank, and I hadn't used for a while. And so I drank and used for 6 days straight, like 24 hours nonstop. We ended up in San Diego and then back up to LA and then Orange County. And then I got date raped out in Huntington Beach that Saturday, and my friends had to take me to the hospital. And then I went and immediately back out and continued to drink and use when I got out of the hospital because I was so upset. And then that's when I woke up in the hospital on May 28th, and I was having alcohol-induced seizures.
That makes more sense now.
That is.
Now it starts to come into focus.
That was the slap in the face. Right. I was 25.
Oh, my gosh.
That makes more sense. Yeah, because addicts will just, you know. Mike, you did have a similar story, that part too.
I did, but you know what? My coming to grips moment, my coming to God moment wasn't a big punch in the face.
But you had like multiple near-death things.
I had a ton of times where I woke up in the hospital and I didn't necessarily know why, and woke up in jail.
And used that as a reason to keep using.
Yeah. That never seemed to get through to me. But, you know, let's not gloss over the fact that there was a myriad of things that were dangerous there. I'm sure there was DUIs, there was accidents, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But to put yourself in the position, and by no stretch of the imagination am I blaming you, but to put yourself in a situation where then you finally get the date rape happens, that has to be, for a female, that's something, you know, Drew and I can't even put ourselves in that mind frame. That must have been just devastating and give you a sense of powerlessness that you probably hadn't experienced.
But she was running away from it, though.
And it feels just gross. Yeah. And then you wake up and you're like, what the, like, you know what I mean? And you don't even, and you're trying to figure out what happened and you can't. And you're replaying it and you're hoping this guy doesn't wake up anytime soon. And it's like, and then you just don't know. Like, you don't know. Did I get that drunk? Did I do that? And like, I know countless girls who this has happened to who have like, whether they get so drunk, they don't even know what they're doing. But to wake up and to wonder if you were responsible for this and like, you know, it just feels gross. It's the gross, and you can't tell anybody because it's gross. And then you just have to live with it.
And so terrible. even though you woke up in the hospital and you had to go through that horrible experience, there's still a lot of work to be done to become an empowered person. What is it that just beyond even getting sober, what is it that motivates you to take such a drastic change and to become the person that you are today, which is nothing short of really extraordinary? What was that spark? Because Drew very easily sniffed out the wake up moment, you know, the alcohol induced seizures, but that's just waking up. What was the spark that got into you that made you decide, you know what, I'm going to take the world by storm?
Okay. So I don't think I've ever really publicly like said this on, I mean, everybody knows it happened, but I don't think I've talked about it. Mm-hmm. I'm shaking. I can't believe I'm going to talk about this, but I feel like it's so important because it's so responsible for who I am. So my first year of sobriety, I was a piece of shit. I wasn't drinking, I wasn't using, but I was like, I just felt like I had so much to prove the world, and I was so aggressive, and I was so angry with myself and everybody else, and like, I was just not the best person, and like, I was always calling everybody out on social media, and like, just being a bully, and so I plagiarized.
Do you imagine that's unusual?
Do I think that's unusual? Yeah. No.
Okay. I was just because it seems like you're blaming yourself for that. It's like, it's the first year of sobriety, right. So you're all over the place. All right.
Yeah. And I was a shit and I wasn't working on myself. Like I did the, you know, 30 meetings in 30 days at AA, and it wasn't really for me, but I like stayed in the AA thing. I tried the sponsor thing and I never like really did the work on myself the first year.
Yeah.
So I started writing a lot because writing was like, I'm shaking. Oh my gosh. Writing was like my outlet for my sobriety. And so I was like writing, putting out like articles, information, like personal stuff, everything I could. And so I started agreeing to more than I could handle.
I made the really big mistake of plagiarizing an article. Mm. So this is no secret. Like I think everybody knows I did this. This was like 4 or 5 years ago. So I put it on my website because I said I would get it done. And then nobody caught it for a couple months. And then it got caught a couple months, like a month after my year of sobriety. Oh my gosh, I'm shaking. Mm. I was so humiliated. Alan Argon, of all people, called me out and was like, you of all people know better than this. And I got slammed so publicly, so hard. I was humiliated. And then it was like a witch hunt. Everybody was trying to just like, you know, like, what else has she done? What else? She's an addict. She's an addict. This is what addicts do. And I was like, I didn't even know what to do because I hadn't worked on myself yet. And I thought my life was over. I was like, this is it. Like, my career is done. You done fucked up for the last time, you stupid idiot. Like, that was it. And so I booked a 3-week trip in Europe and Africa, and I went and I did some soul searching, and I thought I was just going to shut everything down, delete my Instagram, go get a 9-to-5, just, you know, run away. And then I went on that trip and I came back and I did everything in my power to make it right. And I fessed up to everything I did. And I realized like I was being an addict, like stealing other people's work, like sure. Hiding, lying, you know, and getting called out for that and publicly telling everybody on every social media account I had that I did that. And like a couple of the things that, you know, just like dishonest things I hadn't been transparent about, photoshopping pictures because I was insecure about my body. And I just put it all out there. And that was the defining moment for me as a person and in my career. From that day on, I was sober. I was dry that first, you know, year and a couple months. Right. And I didn't work on myself and I was being so shitty. And I am not proud of who I was for that year and a half at all. But like that, doing that, plagiarizing and getting called out for it and letting it almost ruin me and then owning up to it, that is what changed every single thing in me as a human being and like my work ethic and like how I approach everything with like who I am. Like that was it.
It's really interesting. I mean, it's kind of a unique story. I mean, a lot of people have these moments of change where they do things that they discuss themselves one way or another, but this is really about dishonesty for you and the moment of rigorous honesty, you know, from that moment forward, rigorous honesty had to be your second to second way of living.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you'd slip right back into all this.
Yeah. It's a beautiful story.
Yeah, it's a great story. It really is. Because there aren't a lot like that out there. And it's another, you know, and recoveries take all kinds of forms. And I think this one's a very vivid, because, you know, recovery comes through moments of change, right?
Right.
And you had your unique moment. And it's very vivid.
It's weird because, like, I own it so hard. And, like, I made an example out of myself. But it's, like, weird because people still know me as a plagiarizer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's, you have to be okay with that.
That's okay. I did that. And if that's how people want to label me with everything else I've done, that's what they want to focus on, they're allowed to do that. That's okay. It's not up for me to decide.
Well, and I would imagine that everyone else can still look at you as a plagiarist, but the fact that you can look at yourself as the person who came forward and had that moment of honesty, that kind of makes up for everything.
And the addict, her, is the plagiarist, right?
Yeah.
Not her, right?
Yeah,
right. And people don't know how to make that distinction. Okay, well, that's on them. I feel sorry for them if they can't make that distinction.
What was the response from people on social media, which can be particularly brutal? After you did it, you had that catharsis and you come forward and you're rigorously honest. Was there a good share of positive kind of feedback?
It was like a 75-25. Like it made people either love me or hate me. And a lot of people like forgave me because there was also a lot of people who blew the entire thing out of proportion and said I had plagiarized everything. And like, you know, and there people just spread rumors and like half were true and half were completely made up. And I just kind of sat back and let it happen, you know, and a lot of people who like knew me personally and like knew that a lot of the things that were being said weren't true started to stick up for me. And like, I thought it was over, man. But I just like kept working away. And I don't know. It was just like the strangest thing to come on the out, like on the other side of, but like, I don't know. It was crazy. Cause I felt like the people who did support me through that, like supported me even harder on the other side. And like, I have people who comment on my Instagram. Like I've followed you since before you got sober. And I'm like, okay, so you've stuck around through some shit. Yeah. you know? So like, it's just cool. And like, I just appreciate those people so much. And like, to just see me for who I am and to let me evolve, like, just to let me evolve into like what I am now, you know?
And have you found, because you could tell, just by talking to you, there's a real level of almost an aggressive honesty now. There's a, there's an authenticity to you that you're speaking from the heart, and there's no kind of facade there. Have you found that that's been crucial in building your fitness business now? Because yeah, clients can trust you in a certain way.
Yeah. And I get told I'm transparent to a fault all the time, and that I overshare, and I'm, you know, but like, I don't think so. I'm not that person that posts on Instagram several times a day, and I don't let everybody know what's going on. Like, I feel like I share what's important, and I share what could potentially help other people. Mm-hmm. But I just don't have anything to hide, you know? And it's like, I'm a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people because I am so forward and I am so transparent, but I don't know. Like, I just think with me, people know you kind of like, you get what you see and you see what you get and just take it or leave it. And I don't know.
I'll let you know that a lot of that probably has to do with being female, because mm-hmm. I found that guys like me, other guys, you know, who are open about addiction and their past ways and waking up with women that they don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like, man, it's really refreshing to hear you be so open about it. And then when a girl does it, it's like, wow, this might be a little bit too much for me to take.
Yeah.
But continue with it, because like, don't let that deter you.
That's
but
just stigma.
I will say that there's something to that, you know, because there's a lot of, when a woman does it, she's an exhibitionist. When a guy does it, he's being honest and transparent.
Yeah, I get, you know? I have people like, there's a certain part to the story of the weekend that I, the final weekend, I like to call it. It's like pretty graphic. And when I tell it, it's just part of the damn story. You know what I mean? And people are just like, oh my God, I can't even believe you. And I'm just like, part of the story. Like, sorry if you're grossed out by it. You know, I don't know.
What are you like in training now? I mean, to shift gears a little bit. You've bounced around. You're someone who has a lot of experience in a lot of different fields, and most people who dive into CrossFit don't really move away from it. Most people who dive into powerlifting don't really dive away from it. Most people who are into bodybuilding, females especially, in a physique sport, don't really deviate from that. But you've managed to dip your toes into a lot of different pools and do it pretty successfully. What is your training like now, and how do you incorporate a lot of those different disciplines?
So right now I actually got diagnosed with gastroparesis.
From what?
They don't know what caused it. It could have been from an eating disorder in college. It could have been, I got diagnosed with celiac disease last year too. So essentially, my stomach was emptying really slow, like off and on for months. And then it started to get worse and worse to the point where it wouldn't empty for days. Mm. And so I got diagnosed with that. And so I can't eat a ton. So my diet's really modified right now, where we're getting that under control. So I'm essentially training like as I feel like I can and as I have time. I'm supposed to be doing a powerlifting meet in 2 months. We'll see what happens. I'm 30 pounds lighter than what I normally compete at. So
30 pounds, holy mackerel.
Yeah. I normally compete in the 158 class, and I'm like anywhere between like 128, 132 right now.
It must be hard having battled weight issues in the past. And by weight issues, I mean like an eating disorder. It must be so hard to have to fluctuate that much and keep sane.
Yeah, it's just like when the lightest I was, when my drug use, my senior year of high school is when I was using meth. Whew. And that's when I got down to 96 pounds. And so it seemed like through kind of like high school and college, I would go from like 100 pounds to like 130. And then as I got into strength training, that's when I started to gain good weight that I wanted to gain. And then I got very heavy for a little while. So I got up to 195.
Oh my goodness.
And then when I got my sickest last year, I was down to 118.
Holy mackerel.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's just been like, drugs and then like gaining weight because of not using anymore, and then losing because of an eating disorder, and then gaining because no eating disorder. And then, you know, it's just been like my body's been through hell.
Have you had the eating disorder treated per se?
No, it was so weird. I was like, when I was like really insecure about my body and comparing myself to other people a lot, that's when it was just at its worst. And then when I got into strength training and I cared more about like being strong, I just kind of stopped binging and purging.
Now, you may not want to talk about this, and that's fine, but I can't help but ask. But when we sort of used to call it the trifecta, which was eating disorder, addiction, and cutting. And you may not cut, but you do a lot of tatting, and that's sort of in that same sort of zone. That usually means some big childhood trauma. Did something happen?
No. So my parents were together when I was a kid, and we grew up in Hawaii. We didn't have a lot of money. Everything was fine. And then my sister was born, and she actually had a very serious heart condition that she got diagnosed with when she was young. And I was by no means neglected ever by my parents. But like when your baby sister from the ages of 2 to 8 is going through open heart surgeries and recoveries and, you know, everything like that.
When I asked, was there a childhood trauma? The answer is yes, there was chronic trauma because my sister was having horrible life-threatening surgeries when I was a young child. That is horrible trauma.
Yeah, and I mean, my dad used to – go ahead.
Your dad used to what? I'm sorry.
My dad used to have to explain it to her and I for us to understand it. He would say, you know, when I clip your toenails, and we would say, yeah. And he would have to say, that's what the doctors have to do to Maria's heart because it's sick.
Oh, my God.
And I remember my sister when she's 3 and I'm 8, my dad's telling her this. And I remember just shaking in the back of the car, not knowing what to do because I couldn't even keep my shit together for her. And yeah, it was hard because she wasn't allowed to do things I was allowed to do because she had a heart condition. And that's around the time I started acting out was when she was going through all of that.
So that's profound.
Yeah.
Profound. That's makes a lot of sense then.
Yeah.
But it does seem like, unfortunately, it probably snowballed into the point where you had to go through that final weekend and it all culminated to there. But looking at you now, I mean, I look back at someone as someone who is intimidated to try to start one business. I mean, I really am. The idea seems so daunting. And I'm, you know, 15 years older than you. It just doesn't seem like it's something that's realistic. And you not only have, you know, businesses that are purely for monetary gain, you're doing it as philanthropy too. It's really quite admirable. Where did you get that spark now where you wanted to start? You started to incorporate recovery with fitness, which is an awesome, awesome combination.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, it was, so since I knew that lifting is what, like, largely what kept me sober, like, I knew at some point in time I wanted to give that back somehow. So when I was living in Southern California, I also knew I wanted to own a gym, but I was 25, 26, and I didn't think owning a gym was going to happen anytime soon. So on Sundays, that was the day we would deadlift for our powerlifting training, and that's when Donuts and Deadlifts started. And it started as just a hashtag. I would bring the donuts to the gym on Sunday. We'd hashtag Donuts and Deadlifts. Everybody else thought it was stupid. It was just my little thing I did on Sundays. So meanwhile, like, all these people are starting to do donuts and deadlift stuff too, and like they're eating it up and I didn't even realize it. So when I got sober and I realized I needed to leave Southern California because that was, you know, the prime reason I was drinking, I moved to New York City with absolutely no plan at all whatsoever. And when I got to New York City, it was around the time I started Donuts and Deadlifts. So lucky enough for me that, like, you know, created lucrative revenue kind of almost on accident. Cause I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I knew I wanted to open a gym. I didn't know how the hell I was going to afford it because I didn't have any income. Cause I left my job, personal training in Southern California. So I'm like, how am I going to open a gym in New York City or Reno or anywhere? So I started Donuts and Deadlifts essentially on accident. And once that money started coming in, I knew I had to save it to open the gym. So I used the Donuts and Deadlifts money. I saved up $250,000. I opened the gym. And then from the day I opened that gym, I started giving away free memberships to recovering addicts in Reno. Wow. It started with friends that I knew who were getting sober or wanted to get sober. People who I knew from when I was in AA in Reno. That's how it started. And then it turned into a word of mouth thing. And then next thing you know, I have people banging down my doors to join my gym for free. What's happened?
Right. Well, it's a beautiful idea, the idea that you would be opening up, you know, spreading your wings and opening up the idea of recovery through fitness and vice versa, and fitness through recovery. And how do you feel like it's been something that you can confidently say has kept people sober, you know, or at least I don't want to say kept people sober, has been a tool to help keep people sober in the Reno area?
Yeah, absolutely. Did you guys see the GoFundMe video?
I have not, no.
So essentially I have been dumping about $10,000 a month of my own income from my other businesses into this program to fund it, because it doesn't have any funding and I am kind of hard-headed and I have an ego and I think if I want something, I have to pay for it myself. That's just how I've always been raised and that's how I am. So essentially, that's what was happening. And my accountant kept telling me I had to stop giving away free memberships and that I was just hemorrhaging money. And essentially there was like no plan in place. So I finally started asking for help and funding. And I did it through GoFundMe because I've never actually asked people for money before. I didn't know how to do that. GoFundMe was the only way I knew how to ask for money, the right way or the official legitimate way, however you want to say it. So I started the Reps for Recovery campaign on March 24th of 2017. And GoFundMe didn't notice it until December. And then they emailed me in December and they were like, how the hell did we not notice what you're doing? This is amazing. This is like an actual real campaign we want to bring attention to. So I couldn't believe it. And then they told me they were going to come to Reno and film a little documentary on us. So they got a hold of a bunch of my members who are in the program and interviewed them on the phone and stuff. And I was kind of in the dark. And then they essentially showed up to Reno and a bunch of my members in the program came down to the gym and did interviews. And like, I'm shaking again. I actually heard two of them say that the reason they're sober is because of the gym and Reps for Recovery and me and my team, and that they would not be otherwise. And that was like, I literally just burst. I couldn't even handle hearing that. Like, and then I was like, we need to get more people in here, like, immediately. And so we haven't had any money to do that because I only have like 50 paying members in my gym. It's Reno, Nevada, and there's 16 CrossFit gyms. And we're out in the middle of nowhere in Sparks in a big warehouse. And it's just, it's hard. You know, it's not donuts and deadlifts. It's not an online business. And so I have like 50 paying members and way more non-paying members. And essentially, like, I've just been having to turn people away. And so since GoFundMe came and did their story on us and hung out with us for a week and saw what we were doing, I now have $85,000 in funding.
Nice.
That's amazing.
Is there, is there something you can plug so that we can hopefully bump that up even more?
Yeah, it's GoFundMe. If you just go to GoFundMe and go to Reps for Recovery, we stretched our goal to 120,000. So
okay, Reps for Recovery.
Yeah,
Reps for Recovery. Yeah,
it's fantastic.
So I'm a little confused. What you're back and forth between New York and Reno? That part?
No. So I got a space for a gym in New York City, and that was around the time all the plagiarism stuff happened.
Oh, I see.
And I pulled the plug on the whole thing, and I was like, I need to deal with this. Opening a gym is not important right now. Like, I need to get my career back.
Got it.
And like make shit right, you know?
Yeah.
So I scrapped the whole gym. I was about to sign the lease. Like, I got the papers before I went on that trip, and I scrapped the whole thing, and I said, like, I need to be living back in Reno again. And that's where my family was. That's where I just, if I wanted to create this program and open this gym, I had to do it in the community where I struggled.
Got it.
There's shit like that in New York City for people. There's not in Reno.
Right.
And Reno's like one of the highest risk communities in the country.
Though I could still see this kind of thing having a really huge impact in New York.
That's the plan.
Yeah, please let me know if you do that, because I spend a lot of time in the city. I'd love to see what you're doing
there. Okay, yeah,
awesome. Dr. Drew runs New York. He pretty much he's taken over for Trump now that Trump is in the White House.
I spend a lot of time there.
You know, to wrap things up, what would you say to, particularly, I think a lot of females who are interested in fitness have this aversion to going heavy and this aversion to eating complete meals. Now, barring your medical condition now,
this is actually,
you're someone who's been down the road of eating.
But this is actually really this is a big question. Yeah, I don't know if you're saying wrap up, but this we might have a chapter.
No, it is from your professional opinion and to the female listeners.
Yeah, because I don't think women do they do not contemplate lifting heavy weights as a option for them, and it really should be one of the prominent ones.
Now, I will say, before you, CrossFit has helped out immensely. CrossFit has gotten more women to get barbells on their back than anything else in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
And for that, it deserves
a lot of... But let's take it all the way, though.
Yeah. No, but what do you say to our female listeners, though, to the idea of, you know, really beefing up the amount they eat and lifting heavy for the sake of looking like a normal, beautiful human, not looking like a giant monster with a steroid chin? Yeah. Mm.
Well, the thing that, like, I think women don't realize is, like, your body is going to be a byproduct of whatever you put it through. And there's no feeling in the world like getting strong. There's no feeling in the world like being an able-bodied woman. I have had 10 abs and I have had striations and I have had veins and been vascular. And that all that was being good at dieting and being good at being hungry and understanding how to be hungry. There's nothing remotely impressive or rewarding about that, in my opinion. But strength training is different, and it's the most empowering feeling in the world to get strong and, you know, to know that you're just able-bodied. And I that's what I tell all these girls that come into my gym who are newly sober, that hitting a bodyweight squat for the first time is going to taste better than any drink. And the second they feel that and experience that, like, it's the most rewarding feeling in the world. And there's... I don't know why women are afraid to lift. It still baffles me. Yeah. You know,
They don't understand what it can do for them. And they also don't understand what you're describing, which is the feeling that we like and enjoy, but women don't get exposed to. They're not doing it in high school. They're not exposed to it. And so we need to bring women into this.
Right. It's like, it comes down to a feeling. Like, forget what you're going to look like. Forget it, because you don't have to worry about what you're going to look like if you're lifting weights and you're training properly. And even at all CrossFit is lifting weights fastly. And look at those girls' bodies. Like, they look beautiful. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be super, super ridiculous heavy one rep maxes all the time. Like, it can be a combination of everything. Yeah. But the second you stop worrying about what your body looks like and you start worrying about what it feels like and how it performs, what it looks like falls into place for you, and you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Every time.
That's a great note.
Well, honestly, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you, and I want to encourage everybody, again, it's Reps for Recovery at GoFundMe. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Chrissy May.
How did you come across Chrissy May? Just curious.
I saw a write-up about her and about Reps for Recovery. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to look at the GoFundMe video, but I saw just an article about it, and, you know, in my many nights perusing meathead websites, you know, you go to link to link after link after link, and I saw a fitness professional uses her gym for recovery for addiction. I was like, oh, that has me written all over it. Next thing you know, I was like, we got to get this girl on the podcast. And
you got to watch the video GoFundMe did. It's like 6 or 7 minutes. It's so good. They killed it.
Nice.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and I really appreciate you diving into stuff that I could tell was probably not easy for you to open up about, but it means a lot, and I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah,
no problem.
Well done.
Is there anywhere else we could lead the listeners besides the GoFundMe page? Any websites or socials that you want to pimp out?
Just my Instagram. You can find out everything you need to know about me there. Chrissy May Cagney.
At Chrissy May Cagney. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You betcha.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's hard to believe a year has passed since one of the worst cold and flu seasons on record, but here we are again. So if you happen to catch a bug, the one thing every doctor will tell you is stay hydrated. Proper hydration eases a lot of the symptoms of many of these viral illnesses, and sports drinks, water alone, is not the issue. You need to be aggressive. You need something like Hydrolyte, full fluid replacement. Hydrolyte is this oral rehydration product you've heard me talking about. It's better than anything out there. It delivers the right balance of sodium, glucose, and water, providing up to 4 times the electrolytes sports drinks can offer, all with 75% less sugar. So think about that. It's like taking an IV by mouth. But my favorite thing is the convenience. I'm always on the run, so I use the effervescent tablets. You just drop them in a water bottle or even a glass of water. I literally never leave home without them. No one in my family does, for that matter.
And because Hydrolite is appropriate for all ages, it's perfect for the little snowman amongst you when they come home from the school, perhaps sniffling. Hydrolite comes in great flavors, orange, berry, and lemonade, available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or, like I said, those fizzy tablets. I love those. They go everywhere. Come in a little tube. Every package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. Order your supply today at hydrolite.com/drdrew. For a limited time, you can save 30%. We use the code at checkout, drdrew18. That's Dr. Drew 18. So either click through on our banner at drdrew.com or go to hydrolite.com/drdrew and then use that code, drdrew18. All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lawrence Avon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sing One I Do By Myself, Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, at his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Derry W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.